Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Peacock streaming the biggest live events from Super Bowl 56 to complete coverage of the Winter Olympics. It's all the unbelievable sports to love. Sign up now at PeacockTV.com.
Mirror man, mirror man, you twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am.
Morning or afternoon, depending on where you are. This is the first ever Arsenal Opinion Transatlantic Pod. We've got Alfred and Matt in New York. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Pete.
Hello, Alfred.
Hello, Pete.
And we have me over in London, working through the magic of IT. Big thanks to Google Hangouts for this one. But enough of marveling at our technical abilities. We have a big podcast to go through today. Arsenal disappointed again at the weekend. There are hundreds of problems going off. It feels like the collapse of our season. The Wenger out banners are going to be on parade, and we're not even out of August. Boys, initial reaction to what's going on?
Well, Pete, I'd love to say it was a surprise, but it wasn't really, was it? And like you said, we're not even out of August, and this season is officially over. Is that an exaggeration? I don't think so.
No. I think my initial reactions was just, I thought we were going to lose with more going into the game. And I thought by preparing myself for that, I wouldn't feel as depressed afterwards. But I could try to take some joys out of the game like I did the last game. But I was, again, proven wrong, because I thought it was the last time we would see Bellerin on the left. And the last time we would see Oxlade being shoehorned into the team like he is, especially after having told Wenger he doesn't want to play for him anymore. But no, we saw the same thing again, and we did it even worse.
And one thing's for sure, we are going to have a very interesting few days ahead of us, because it's very clear that the strategy of keeping players who had a year left on their contract probably isn't going to work now. And now we've got 3 days to find a solution for the rest of the season.
I think, Pete, I read your Kraken post on the subway to record the pod today. Tell us a little bit about the reactions to that post. Does it feel like previously, or is the mood changing in the fan base?
I would say that this is the first time I've written a post about a shocking August game where the fans are almost in complete and total agreement. Like, there's no factions now. There's no divide. Everybody knows that Arsene Wenger has to go. Everybody knows that this season is going to be shocking, apart from Stan Kroenke. So it's been, for the first time ever, like, the Wild West views of Le Grove seem to be accepted as the truth now. And, this has been 10 years in the making, but sad to see. However, before we get into a very structured, measured, and clinical post, not post today, podcast, I think we should bring a little bit of joy to proceedings. So Matt, podcast number 23, what do you have for us?
Well, you know, the number 23, I mean, if you look at basketball, it's typically been a shirt worn by the most illustrious of players, Michael Jordan's. We're not quite at that level at Arsenal. We've had three number 23s. We've had one who is in the Michael Jordan standard of Arsenal player, in my opinion. And that was a big central defender who moved across the North London divide and became an invincible Sol Campbell. He is surely worthy of that. Do you remember those days? Do you remember? People talk about where they were when JFK was assassinated. I remember where I was when Sol Campbell signed for Arsenal. I was on Chiswick High Road. Driving my mum.
Completely out of the blue. It was completely out of the blue as well. In the days where you could keep a transfer secret.
Yeah, it was on like Capital Radio. I heard it on the news. It's fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant times.
One of the best bits of news anyone could ever hear. Another 23 who seemed for a while as if he could elevate himself into superstar status. Our little Russian, Andrei Arshavin.
Oh, I miss him. I miss his good games.
Yeah, you don't miss the shit ones. But that those it seems sort of fitting that we're talking about Arshavin and his four goal salvo the day after shipping four goals against Liverpool. We could have done with him yesterday; it would have been a 4-4 draw.
I don't care who goes against me here. Still, would say one of the most talented players I've ever seen at Arsenal when he was on form.
Yeah,
like he had it all. Even when he was playing badly, he was scoring goals and setting up assists. He wasn't built for the wing.
No.
Or any sort of physical responsibility.
And then finally, someone who was built for physical responsibility, who should be an awesome number 23, but unfortunately is just the kind of guy you'd like to date your sister, Danny Welbeck.
Oh, Danny.
Such a great smile. What a smile.
Yeah. What a smile.
But, you know, yesterday sort of summed him up sort of in that first half. He managed to escape a defender through pretty much one-on-one versus the goalkeeper and sort of shanked a shot over the bar. That was Thierry Henry. That's bottom right corner. It's 1-1. It's game on. But it's not Thierry Henry. It's Danny Welbeck.
Well, that's as fun and lighthearted as it's going to get today, guys. So without further ado, let's move on to the second part of the pod.
So let's go back in time, pre-apocalypse, pre-game, to when we first saw that lineup. I wonder if that lineup will actually become famous as, you know, the moment that Arsene Wenger's Arsenal sort of ended. But, you know, after everything that happened at Stoke, we sort of expected some sort of reversion to players playing in the positions that they're supposed to. And Alfred, you said last week the one thing that we got out of the Stoke game was that Bellerin wouldn't play at left back again. What was your reaction when you saw him at left back again yesterday?
I mean, I think, Pete, you rightfully pointed out that it would be a very Wenger thing to do to try it again. And you were very, very correct. After the game, I really liked Thierry Henry's comments that Arsenal is just too nice and it's a nice team. And it reminded me a little bit about Donald Trump and who he rewards and who he rewarded after the election, in that you always hear him say, "Why do I love him? Because he was very nice to me. He was very nice to me." And this theory about people being nice to you is who you reward when you're under pressure, right? And if you looked on that lineup, I think that was all of Arsene's favorite players shoehorned into some sort of position because he trusts them. And Welbeck on top was like the ultimate core there. Not Giroud, not Lacazette. He was just the nicest guy in the squad on top. And that squad was just like, you know, the nice guys. And he doesn't trust the new signings yet, so they were on the bench. And he is still punishing Theo. because I thought maybe they were going for pace, but they obviously weren't. And yeah, what a nice lineup that was.
And isn't it strange though that we've signed, you know, we weren't very good last year. We've signed two players in a left wing back, best left back or wing back in the Bundesliga last year. Top scorer in France in Lacazette. We've got our biggest game of the season so far. Three games in, no one's fatigued, and neither of them start. Was that a shock, Pete, that neither of them started?
I think it was a, really big shock. I mean, I sort of loosely could go along with the idea of Danny Welbeck starting through the middle. Liverpool have been terrible from set pieces. They're struggling at centre-back this year, trying to sign Virgil van Dijk. But it still didn't quite make sense if you need a... because he's been terrible in front of goal. But like, at least have Lacazette, somebody that's clinical in there, that's going to cause Liverpool a problem that they don't quite understand yet. Kolasinac not playing was really absurd to me, because Monreal has struggled for pace for two seasons now. Liverpool are built for speed and impact, and having like a brutal left back playing would have been beneficial yesterday. But I think the bigger concern for me is Arsene Wenger on one hand puts all of the blame of last season down to players not feeling secure that he wasn't signed into a new deal. So he admitted that the instability of the club last year was because no one knew what he was going to do. And then he rolls into this season with six first-team players out of contract. He plays Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who told him 3 days prior to the game that he wanted to go and play for Chelsea face-to-face. He plays Sanchez, who we know has been feigning stomach injury all summer and wants to leave. And he plays Ozil, who completely disappeared against Stoke. And the output was cancerous. So like, for Wenger to not understand that if you play players that don't want to be there, they might not put in a good performance, was almost as bad as leaving your two new signings who've got everything to prove on the bench.
So I think, you know, we touched on it last week, which is, are we a better team without Sanchez and Ozil, built around a more hardworking structure, players who still want to play for Arsenal? And I think this lineup might have begun to help us answer that question. So if we were dissatisfied with the setup pre-game, let's move on to the game itself.
I was looking at our performances against Liverpool last season when we lost big time twice, and I wasn't feeling well at all when the whistle blew. I also couldn't see what the plan was. It was really, really difficult to see what our idea of an attack was, what defenders we were going to attack, where we were going to pressure, and what the whole idea was behind that lineup. And I couldn't see it. I could, however, see Liverpool's plan immediately. It was crystal clear, and the way that they were going to approach holding as the weakness in that back three was so evident, with everyone drifting out left to have a go at him. Pete, what did you feel the plan was, and did you see any sort of ideas there?
I think that there were loose grains of planning yesterday, but I would say if there was an overarching strategy, it was go to Liverpool and play them at their own game and beat them with quality. I think it seemed that there was no consideration of Liverpool's playing style in the way that we lined up. Like for me, Liverpool blast you in the first 25 minutes. They try and get an early goal, and they've been doing that since Brendan Rodgers. Like that's been their plan. They've got that front three loaded with pace, and I can't for the life of me work out after that Stoke game why Arsene and Steve Bowl didn't sit there and say, you know what, let's, like, if we get a point away at Anfield, that'll be good. So what we'll do is we'll set up pragmatically. We'll have a solid midfield sitting in front of the back three, or we could have played a back four. We'll try and absorb their pressure. And then when they get tired in the second half, we'll bring on Lacazette and we'll bring on Kolasinac and we'll try and nick a goal. Like, we had no plan. Our plan was put the players out there and see what happened. And sometimes that works out, but I think the days of having players that didn't need to play with the structure because they were so much better than everybody else and they could win are long gone. And we suffered almost immediately. But I think my biggest upset about it is you could see that it was going wrong after 10 minutes and he didn't make a change until 45 minutes. He just let it happen.
Matt, how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that Peter said, really, because never did we ever think that we might get a foothold in the game. And for me, it's, you have to look back. There's been one game over the last 6 months where we've played really well, and that was the FA Cup final. And that was because there was like a huge level of concentration and discipline and application. And guess what? When you have those things, you can win football matches against good teams. When you don't give away straight passes, when you snap into tackles. And yesterday, it almost felt like there were a couple of different factions within the team. You had Alexis Sanchez sort of herring around, trying to press people and chase the ball down. But there was almost something selfish about the way he was doing it, I thought, which was, and I don't blame him for it, but he was almost doing it to shine a light on all the people who weren't doing it. So we never pressed as a team. We sort of pressed as individuals, and then it almost gave individuals the right to sort of look around at everyone else and go, what's wrong with you? Weren't you pressing and chasing everyone down? And I think that was the biggest thing that came out of it for me, is that it was such a disjointed performance. It wasn't a team effort. It was lots of individuals who almost had their own individual agendas that they were trying to pursue. So, you know, the whole thing was slightly sickening. As was all the sort of Instagram apologies afterwards. And it's just that sense. We said it after the Stoke game. We said the Stoke game wasn't that bad. It was just so familiar. And you have to look upon it as another game in like a whole journey of games like that. And the Liverpool capitulation was made all the more painful because we see it every single year.
I think also this should have been the most predictable top six fixture this year. And that's kind of the most worrying thing. Klopp is great against top six sides, and he's really bad at the bottom 12. I think he has 9 wins, 9 draws, and 1 loss against top six teams in the Premier League, because he basically only knows how to play underdog football. He wants the opponent to have the ball so that they can nick it and they can score on a counter. That game plan is so easy. And if you had watched a single game that Liverpool played against a top six squad last year at home, that was the plan every time. And Mane scored, I think, almost in all of those games. And when you saw Mane do run against holding, cut in and shoot, you were like, this is the easy game for Arsenal to actually plan out. The hard ones are the others. So that made me extremely worried against the other fixtures we have coming up, because this should be tactically maybe the easiest game we have facing the top six. Pete, I know you also talked a little bit in your post about our midfield. And that was, I think, one of the most interesting things about the game was seeing Ramsey basically being on top. But some other comments were also that, like, is Salah actually this good, or are we making him look this good? I think Salah could be that good. But the fact that we made Jordan Henderson look like one of the world's best midfielders playing against Xhaka and Ramsey, I thought was fascinating. What are your thoughts on the midfield setup, as you mentioned earlier?
I was thinking... And I think in terms of Twitter, because it's where all the interesting football chat goes on. But all of the hipster favourites, the, you know, kind of normal fans that go week in, week out and have to watch these players play, but all of the hipster players are kind of being found out big time. But the favourites, like Aaron Ramsey, spent most of the game trying to play like a striker, like he always does. He might have some great statistics and he might look good on a spreadsheet, but he never delivers. And he always plays like he's trying to earn himself a move to Barcelona to be over there with Gareth Bale. Xhaka, he might sometimes have a 100% pass completion rate, but he always makes a stupid mistake. That's giving the ball away in a bad position, or that's picking up a red card, or it's just not being physically ready for the Premier League. And sure, there are things that we can do for Xhaka to make his job a bit easier, but Jordan Henderson made up 5 yards to get in on a parried shot from Petr Cech yesterday. That was atrocious. The ball that Xhaka gave away for the first goal was atrocious. The back heel that he attempted 5 yards from his goalkeeper was atrocious. Mesut Ozil, another one. Look, the guy might have made, he's made 30 more passes in the final third in the final third than any other player in the Premier League this season. But it doesn't matter if he's got no interest in contributing to the team. Like he's the quarterback that we were talking about. He has nothing else to offer apart from those beautiful passes. And it all came, like all of that came home to roost yesterday, that we have a bunch of hipster players that when put in the real world of competitive football, can't compete. And I think that it's time to look at some of those players and say, look, is Xhaka Premier League ready? Is Aaron Ramsey ever going to hit the next level? Is Mesut Ozil good enough to have a start in place in a team that's struggling? I think they're all important questions. But I think that the key thing here is that midfield is not built for anything outside, like inside the top four this year.
Would the midfield be better with a different formation?
I think it would be much better with a manager that forced accountability on players. I think if Xhaka is playing under Pep Guardiola or Mourinho, he would never ever attempt that back heel. I think that if Ozil was playing under Mourinho, he'd be dropped for a month. And he'd be called a coward in the dressing room and someone would throw a football boot at him. If Chamberlain played the way that he did yesterday under any of the elite managers, he'd be sold. And he'd be sold to Stoke or somewhere like that. No chance that he'd be going to Chelsea. He'd just be shifted out the back door. So I think a different formation that takes into account the skill set of players would be great. But I also think like just having a different culture at the club where that sort of performance isn't acceptable. We have a manager that lambasts the players in public. And we need a fan base that's going to make it difficult for those players this year who don't want to put the effort in, because that was an absolute disgrace. And I felt terrible for the away fans yesterday.
I love the picture of the whole bench that someone caught in the middle. It really looked like a group of lads on the plane back from a stag do that all had some sort of dark secret that they hope would never get out. It feels like we're not let in on something, like, because they all seemed like they knew what was wrong. And I mean, Theo Walcott not even watching the game, I think, was like the most obvious and telling sign that there's no sense of community there. There's no team left.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've ever worked at a company or a business that isn't doing particularly well, you know what happens to the culture in that place. And basically what typically happens is it feels like everyone is trying to jump ship. Everyone is, you know, perched around the water cooler, getting a coffee, talking about how they're interviewing at other companies or trying to get another job. And I think it's exactly what's happening at Arsenal at the moment. And I think behind the scenes, there's a load of players going, yeah, you know, let's hope we're all out of here by Thursday. And yeah, it's a joke what's happening. The management don't have any idea what's going on. And you just get the sense that that is what is happening at Arsenal. And having worked at a company in the past that wasn't doing very well, you look when new people come in and you almost laugh at them and you go, I can't believe they've just got here. Like they don't understand how shit it is. And you just get the sense that that's what it's like at Arsenal. Kolasinac and Lacazette had to come because Atletico weren't involved and the Premier League has got so much money. But there really is the sense of you must have been mad to come here, because this club is not going anywhere at the moment.
So I think we're heading into the final section here, and I think there are two parts that I'd like to explore. Firstly, what do we think is going to happen over the next week? And then what do we think should happen? So let's start with what we think will happen, because we've been here before, guys. I think the last time we were in a situation this desperate, we just come off the back of an 8-2 loss to Manchester United. It was one of the worst games under Arsene Wenger's tenure. And he went from it's difficult to buy players, it's not like buying a loaf of bread in Tesco's, to I've bought 15 loaves of bread and they're all terrible. We bought Andre Santos, we bought Per Mertesacker, Park Chu-young. Who else did we buy in that Arteta window? Yeah, it wasn't the best of windows. Like Arteta and Mertesacker aside, it wasn't a great panic buying session.
Don't forget Kim Källström here, okay?
Kim Källström, yes. So we're heading into a very important next few days. We haven't been able to sell any of the deadwood this summer for plenty of reasons, like quality and the expense of the quality that we're trying to jettison. But we also haven't been able to buy players. We were always more than two players away from competing again this year, and it's become abundantly clear that there are players that are contract rebels that we're going to have to get rid of, and we're going to have to sign in some names. So, Alfred, what do you think needs to happen over the next few days to rescue this season?
What needs to happen is an incredibly difficult question. There is something around, like, you know, as I talked about last week, I just... like this, it needs to burn so that we can kind of rise from the ashes. But just how, I don't really know. I mean, it's now looking more and more likely that we are going to ship Alexis, Oxlade and Mustafi, which arguably at points last season was the three best players. And that is an incredible regression. It's just beyond words what kind of structure we'll have after that. And the fact that we are not talking about, I mean, selling the players we wanted to sell, but we are now actually running the risk of, especially with our performance, losing some of our best staff, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. And who we're going to get, I mean, it looks like Lemar might actually go to Liverpool. So, I mean, are we in for Van Dijk? Maybe. Is that what we needed the most going into the season? I'm not sure. I think we said at a pod a couple of months ago, if we could sell one player at the club to make it better, who would it be? I said Aaron Ramsey, because he is making Arsenal believe that we don't need someone to replace Cazorla, and that Ramsey is keeping us from a world-class centre midfielder who can run box from box and be creative and break the lines. And I think that's where we've ended up, and where our biggest problem is in the middle of the field. And Ramsey is not the solution there. I think he's going to have Arsene's, you know, trust the whole season. I think he's invested too much in Xhaka now for that to change as well. So we are looking at an atrocious midfield at the moment with no cohesion whatsoever. And with a person who's supposed to be covering for the back three or back four being, I mean, yeah, he just makes mistakes after mistakes. So I hope, and I think, to your question, what we should do, it should be to get someone in the middle of the park, like Seri, for example.
Matt, what do you think we should do with the contract rebels?
The contract rebels, I mean, it's really unfortunate because I think we thought we were in a slightly different place than we actually are, in that Arsene Wenger decided to put everything on red and say, let's try and win the league this season. We haven't got Champions League. We'll keep our players and we'll try and convince them that we can challenge again. And that has proven to not be correct. People really want to get out of Arsenal. There's no chance of having a successful season. And we now run the risk of leaving 100 million on the table. So, unfortunately, I think we have to look at how circumstances have actually changed and we have to change our strategy in line with that. So, for me, the best thing that we can do now, which it sort of pains me to say it, is to sell as many of the contract rebels as we can. We have to get the money, because otherwise it's clear that we're not going to get any value from them playing on the pitch this season. So we need to sell in the next 3 days Alexis, Ox. I don't think anyone's even interested in Ozil, but if we could sell him, we should sell him. Get the money banked, and we need to start building Arsenal from the ground up again. So if we could get Lamar, that would be amazing, because at least we would have replaced one of the players with no contract with a player who would actually have some sell-on value. But that has to be the strategy now, because there's not going to be any value coming from those players on the pitch. And that's just, you know, us talking about the playing staff. I mean, I don't know whether we want to touch on it now, but you know, if we could have a moment where the board actually decided to bring in a new manager this season and treat it as a transition season, even working with just the current staff as they are, and saying you're not going to have any transfer funds till next summer, I still think that would be a step in the right direction.
There is that element of, like, I think we are now at a point where all of us are saying, actually, let Alexis go. We can't ruin his prime. We're also saying, why would Lamar come to us? There is nothing attractive about Arsenal Football Club for a young player like him. We need to do something right now to show the world that we have acknowledged that we have crashed. I think you pointed out, let's get Tuchel in, because we need to show them that, like, no, we still finished, you know, second a season ago, and we have it in us, and we are going to really do something to change, and we are going to keep some incredible players and do one more signing. But I really do think that we need to do something in the managerial position now to not become a top eight club even, because right now I can't see us making top six.
And there are plenty of examples of managers that have come in and turned situations around. I think a prime example would even be Leicester City last year. They looked dead. They looked dead certs for going down. They sacked Ranieri and installed Shakespeare. And the difference in the way that the team played changed in one game. And then they fought and survived the season. And if you go back in history to 1996, Arsene Wenger came in partway through the season and took over. So I don't think it's beyond, it's only beyond the pale to consider that Arsenal would make a change this early, because it's Arsenal. And I think like Thomas Tuchel is a really interesting proposition. Like, I think he had some problems behind the scenes last year with managing the board's expectations, and like he had some relationship issues with players. But you know, Dortmund last season were an absolute joy to watch. They still made the Champions League. They still won a trophy, and there was a philosophy there. And I think that this is the problem with Arsenal at the moment. There's no clear philosophy about, you know, what we stand for. Like, what are these values that Arsenal has? Because from where I'm sitting, they're certainly not sporting values. And I think this is what is making Arsenal such an unattractive proposition. There's no accountability to anybody within the club at Arsenal. And I think if you are playing for a manager that you know is going to be there regardless of performance, regardless of results, regardless of how bad he manages a summer, very difficult to get behind it. And I think that that's why Arsenal fans convinced themselves last year that Ozil and Sanchez weren't going to sign on with new deals because they were unsure of what Arsene Wenger was going to do. I think that what's come out of that is, yeah, sure, they weren't going to sign deals until they knew what Arsene Wenger was going to do. And he signed a new deal, and now they want to leave. And that's six first-team players that won't sign contracts. And then it's leaking out onto the pitch. Like, it's absolutely cancerous what's happening with that squad. And Wenger's left it so late in the window now, but the board should say, no, that you stick with what you've got now. We're not going to make any last minute signings. We're going to try and sell the dross. And if you're going to stay, you're going to deal with the consequences of a badly planned summer. Because the worst thing that we could do is let Arsene Wenger keep that cash, like send that cash into the bin. And the second worst thing we could do is let him go and spend £150 million on players that he's only just thought about. Because then the next manager that's going to come in is going to have to deal with a bloated wage bill, a low transfer budget pot, and, like, worst of all, a batch of incredibly average players, because all our best players are going to leave next summer. And we haven't even thought about the players that are in the last year of their deal next year. So I think the best decision to make strategically would be to fire Wenger. But if we don't have the guts to do that, we should not let him spend a single penny more, and we should get rid of the contract rebels right now.
Okay, so lots of interesting conversation about what should happen this week. So just to summarise, let's just say, let's pick the manager and the players you think we should hire and buy if we were going to do so this week. Alfred, manager and players to buy.
I think we should get Thomas Tuchel, and I need to understand how to pronounce his name, because I realize I have pretty much only ever read it, but Tuchel, because his attitude, he obviously had attitude problems at Dortmund, and that's exactly what we need at this moment. We need to get someone in there who is as fierce and furious as the Klopp, but without the charisma. So that's who I would get from a manager point of view. I think, again, a Seri or someone in the middle of the pitch that we could go for. Why not do a 100 million euro bid for Vidal, for example, and try to get him from Bayern? He's getting to the end. He would play perfectly with Sanchez. He would get Sanchez to stay, and he could really revolutionize the team.
Pete?
Well, Alfred's gone for my number one target of a manager. I think, like, Tuchel, I think Pep Guardiola said the two most exciting managers in the world were Tuchel and Conte. Conte just won the Premier League. Tuchel had a bad season from a maturity standpoint, not being able to deal with the board, but, like, he will be keen to come back and prove his worth. And I think he's the genius that Arsenal need. But if he's not available, Laurent Blanc did a sterling job at PSG for a number of years, experienced head, like quite a bit younger than the current manager that we have. And then I think on the player front, I would be using the players that we're trying to sell right now as bargaining chips. I would, if Alexis Sanchez is attracting the interest of Paris Saint-Germain, we should be asking them about Rabiot. We should be asking them about, I think he's pronounced it Kiracek, the Polish defensive midfielder. We should be looking at anybody that they've got that might be surplus to requirements to inject a bit of excitement our end. Like, we're getting rid of our best player, but maybe we're getting two in return. I know that Monaco were trying to do that as part of the Mbappe deal. But we need a top quality centre half. And I'm completely agree with Alfred. Like, we need a midfielder that can replace the skills of Santi Cazorla, who won't be about this season. Seri looks a very exciting talent. Like them, that, like, I feel like if Europe is overproducing anything, it's small, technically gifted midfielders that can run the show. So, like, we need to bolster where we're lacking. But definitely, we need a new manager and a new philosophy.
And from my side, I think we have. There's only one man for me to come in as manager, and that is Thierry Henry. I think we've got nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose.
We've seen Zidane come in and do it at Real Madrid. We heard Thierry Henry yesterday talking about Arsenal having lost their way and being unwatchable. Who better? Someone who knows the spirit of the club, someone who's a legend, someone who will unite the fan base, someone who young players want to play for, someone with it all to prove. And we could say to him, come in, you don't have any transfer monies, show us this. You can come into the end of the season and earn yourself a contract and prove yourself to be an Arsenal managing legend as well as a playing legend.
So thank you, Pete and Matt. I think this has been quite cathartic for me. And it was a little bit kind of upbeat and positive, not as depressing I thought that it was going to be. Pete, you seem a little bit fired up, I feel.
I think what's becoming very clear is Arsene Wenger is not going to last the 2 years of his deal. He can't. And I think that realization is getting me through this. Like before, when he was making top four and he was making, you know, big bucks for Stan Kroenke, it made sense. But the way it's going at the moment, like the wage bill is over the top. He's losing like expensive assets on free transfers, players that want to play for him, and on the pitch is an absolute abomination. So I'm hoping that this is the last year. I don't see him lasting past next summer. And like the results like tomorrow are going to be part parcel of this season. So although it's going to be horrible, if there feels like there's going to be an end goal at the back end of it, then, you know, like we'll just have to deal with it. But just hope it doesn't get too bad.
Matt? Yeah, I think it's going to be, I think this is actually going to be a massive week for Arsenal. And I know we've said that before and nothing normally changes. But it feels like things will change in terms of playing personnel. I think our lineup for this season is going to look very different after this week, especially if we lose two players who have been, you know, regular names on the first team sheet. Knowing Arsene Wenger and his spirit of self-preservation, he will bring players in if he loses them because he'll know that he sort of has to secure his own position. So it promises to be a very, very interesting week ahead of us.
And I have to say that I'm quite excited because I think we have finally seen the end of the project Hector on the Left. So without any further ado, thank you, Pete.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, guys.
Get right to the romance and find the way to wow this Valentine's with 1-800-Flowers.com. From classic roses and bouquets to decadent chocolate-covered berries, gourmet treats, and more, surprise your Valentine with 1-800-Flowers.com. Right now, get the 18-stem Enchanted Rose Medley for $39.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for $10 more. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.